relentlessly chipped away at the tough black basalt. Looking back toward the rover, he saw Mironov planting another beacon into the ground. It was not easy work. This was real rock, not the compacted sands they had found around their domed base. The thin layer of reddish dust that covered the rock was easily scuffed away. Jamie wondered why the wind did not remove it entirely. Inside his hard suit, Jamie could not feel any wind, and there were no clouds in the salmon sky to show air movements. Yet the meteorology instruments on their beacons showed a fairly steady breeze of more than 40 miles per hour running up the long, gradual slope toward the volcano's distant summit. At night, the wind direction reversed to downslope and slowed to little more than 20 miles per hour. 40 miles per hour would be a stiff gale on Earth, Jamie knew, but in the thin air of Mars there was no strength in the wind, not even enough to scour the last layer of sand off the rocks. Jamie put his hands on his knees and let the suit's fans cool him down for a while. His visor was starting to fog over from his exertion. He waited, scanning the barren rocky waste that stretched all around him. Dead rock, as rough and bare as the worst badlands he had ever seen in New Mexico. Blasted and pitted by meteor craters, some as big as a football field, most nothing more than the dent a hammer might make on the hood of a car. There were cracks in the solidified lava, vents and fissures that twisted from one crater pit to another. The ground rose almost imperceptibly toward the volcano's high caldera, so far away that it was well over the horizon. Strangely, not so many rocks were scattered around. The molten basalt must have pushed them downslope. Jamie pictured the black rocky field on which he stood as it must once have been. A broad, surging stream of red-hot lava spewing from those vents to flow sluggishly down toward the plain, melting or bulldozing the rocks in its path. Heat must be coming up from the interior along this fault line, Jamie reasoned. Molten magma flowing time and time again, building these big cones, spilling out to form the shields. Then what about Olympus Mons, some 1,500 kilometers to the northwest? It's not sitting on a fault, not that we can see. But it's probably younger than these three beauties. Could there be a hot spot down below that built Pavonis and its two companions, then migrated northwest to build Olympus? Jamie realized his back ached from stooping awkwardly in the cumbersome suit. He straightened up, wondering, does Mars have plate tectonics like Earth? Wouldn't think so. The planet's so small that its core can't possibly have enough heat energy to move whole continents of mantle rock. But there was enough heat energy to build these volcanoes. Where did it come from? Is it still flowing? He looked upslope, his eye following the rugged, dark landscape as it climbed into the pink sky. When's the last time you burped, Pavonis, my friend? Have you gone completely cold, or will you spread lava across this ground again one day? Suddenly, a flicker of motion in the corner of his eye startled him. It was gone by the time he turned his face toward it. A shadow flitting across the ground? Like a bird flying overhead? Jamie looked upward and saw the silvery speck of the soar plane glinting in the sunlight high above. His heart was pounding from the sudden rush of adrenaline. It made him feel foolish. No Martian hawk circling up there, just Pete Connors trying to photomap Pavonis' caldera. Hope it makes Patel happy.
Voice check.
Mironov's boyish tenor in his earphone startled Jamie. He looked around and saw that his shadow stretched long across the ground. The sun was getting close to the horizon.
Patel here.
The rover was parked 100 meters or so down the slope, between a meteor crater twice its size and a zigzag fissure that might once have been a lava vent. You were right, Rava, Jamie said silently. These volcanoes have so much to tell us, and we won't be here long enough to even begin to understand their story.
Waterman okay,
Jamie said. The voice checks were standard safety procedure when the scientists were out of visual range of the astronaut or cosmonaut in charge of the team. In this rough ground, Mironov could not possibly keep all three of his wandering teammates in sight. There was a long silence.
The Gibb?
Mironov's voice sounded sharp in Jamie's earphones.
Dr. Al-Naghib, voice check, please.
No answer.
Dr. Al-Nagib? He was over by the fissure there.
Patel pointed further upslope.
Perhaps the terrain is blocking his radio transmission.
Jamie heard low, guttural muttering, Mironov cursing in Russian. Following the outstretched arm of Patel's yellow suit, Jamie called into his helmet microphone.
Let's take a look, Rava. Maybe he's in trouble. No, I do not believe so. Stay where you are. It's my responsibility to find him,
Mironov shouted.
I don't want two of you missing.
But Jamie was already striding upslope as fast as he could in a hard suit. The slope was easy, and his boots gave him good traction, but the rough ground was treacherous.
Rava,
he called.
Where did you see him last?
The butter-yellow suit had not moved.
To your right,
Patel's voice replied.
Perhaps 20 or 30 meters farther up.
Jamie worked his way around a conical pit, a meteor strike that looked shining new compared to the more weathered craters dotting the ground. He saw a fissure snaking across the black rock, wide enough for a man to fall into. How deep? Very, he saw, as he bent awkwardly to peer into it. Black and deep as hell. He turned on his helmet lamp, but the beam shone only feebly into the steep crevasse.
Dr. Nagib?
He called. Still, no reply. If he's stuck inside this fissure, he ought to be able to hear my radio signal, Jamie said to himself. If he's conscious. If he's alive.
Wait where you are,
Mironov called.
I am coming. I have the directional finder.
Jamie had to turn completely around to see the Russian bounding toward him in his fire engine suit, a black box the size of a personal television set in one gloved hand. Patel was still frozen where he stood. His only motion had been to let his arm relax down. A lot of good the directional finder will do, Jamie thought. If Nagib can't hear us, and we can't hear him, there's no radio signal for the directional finder to zero in on.
He must be on the other side of this crevasse,
Jamie called to Mironov, unconsciously raising his voice as if he had to shout to cover the distance between them. Before Mironov could reply, Jamie took a few steps backward, then ran up and jumped across the fissure. In the low gravity, it was easy, even with the cumbersome suit weighing him down.
Wait!
Mironov bellowed.
I order you to wait!
Jamie took a few more steps forward, swiveling his gaze back and forth as much as the helmet would allow. He's up here somewhere. Got to be. Out of our line of sight, out of radio contact. That means... The uneven ground seemed to stop suddenly off to the left, as if it dropped away steeply. Jamie headed that way, while Mironov's puffing breath panted in his earphones.
This way, I think,
Jamie called, heading for the break. It was a ravine, he saw, pretty steep. And there Nagib lay, crumpled face down at the bottom of a 10-meter drop. The ravine was roughly 20 meters across, a ragged, irregular trench carved into the solid basalt. Nagib's deep green hard suit sprawled at its bottom like a broken, discarded toy, legs spraddled, unmoving.
He's here!
Jamie shouted, turning enough to see Mironov sailing across the crevasse.
Come on! We'll need a rope, a line.
Gingerly, Jamie started down the steep side of the crevasse. It was all in shadow, with the sun dropping toward the horizon, but there was still enough light to see rough places to clutch and precarious footholds.
Go back to the rover and get a climbing winch,
he heard Mironov call to Patel. The radio voice was noticeably dimmed once Jamie's helmet dropped below the rim of the ravine. It seemed to take an hour to work his way down to the Egyptian. It was dark down at the bottom. He needed his helmet lamp to see the final few meters. In his earphones, though, he heard Nagib breathing raggedly. He's alive. His suit hasn't ruptured. Finally, he reached the geophysicist's side. The backpack was badly dented. In the light of Jamie's helmet lamp, it was difficult to see how serious the damage might be.
Is he alive?
Mironov's voice was so loud it made Jamie wince.
Yes, we'll need a line to haul him up. On the way!
Slowly, tenderly, Jamie turned Nagib onto his back. Damned helmet's banged up too, he saw. He peered into the visor, wiped at the red sand that had smudged it. Nagib's eyes were fluttering. His face seemed covered with blood. He coughed. Jamie checked the backpack monitoring gauges on Nagib's wrist.